Pull up a chair. I want to tell you about a man who could pour iced tea into a glass while rolling an airplane upside down, and not spill a drop. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Taildragger, and today on The Hangar we're talking about Robert A. Hoover, Bob Hoover, the pilot's pilot. The man Jimmy Doolittle himself called the greatest stick and rudder pilot who ever lived. Before we get into it, today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. Now, to understand Bob Hoover, you have to understand that he didn't start out as the smoothest pilot in the world. He started out as a kid from Nashville, Tennessee, who got so airsick during his first flying lessons that he'd have to pull over on the side of the road on the way home and throw up. That's the truth. The greatest airshow pilot of the 20th century used to lose his lunch climbing into a cockpit. He fought through it. He'd go up, get sick, come down, and go right back up again. He decided he was going to beat it, and he did. By the time he was 20 years old, he was flying for the Army Air Corps, and by 22, he was flying Spitfires for the Royal Air Force out of North Africa. Then, in February of 1944, flying his 59th combat mission off the coast of southern France. His Spitfire took a direct hit from a Focke-Wulf 190. He bailed out into the Mediterranean, got picked up by the Germans, and spent the next 16 months in a prisoner of war camp called Stalag Luft 1. Now, here's where it gets interesting. Hoover didn't just sit in that camp. He spent his time studying the Luftwaffe airplanes he could see from the wire. He memorized cockpit layouts from sketches other prisoners drew in the dirt. And in April of 1945, with the Russians closing in and the camp in chaos, Hoover and another prisoner walked out, found a beat-up Focke-Wulf 190 on a German airfield, and Hoover climbed in and flew it. He'd never sat in one before in his life. He flew it across enemy territory and put it down in a Dutch field. Belly landed it because he couldn't figure out the gear handle in time. That's the kind of man we're talking about. After the war, he ended up at Wright Field as a test pilot, and that's where he met a fellow named Chuck Yeager. The two of them were inseparable, and on October 14, 1947, when Yeager broke the sound barrier in the Bell X-1 over Muroc Dry Lake, Bob Hoover was the chase pilot flying the P-80 Shooting Star alongside him. Yeager got the headlines. Hoover got the satisfaction of being there. But the test pilot life and the combat life, those weren't what made him a legend. What made him a legend was a yellow P-51 Mustang named Ole Yeller, and later a twin-engine Shrike Commander. Picture this. It's a hot summer afternoon at an air show somewhere in Middle America. The crowd is sweating in the bleachers. The smell of 100 low lead and barbecue smoke hangs in the air. And Bob Hoover walks out to that green and white Shrike Commander in his suit and his straw cowboy hat, looking like an insurance salesman, not an aerobatic pilot. He fires up both engines, taxis out, and goes wheels up. And then he does something nobody else in the world could do. He pulls up into a 16-point hesitation roll. He does a loop, and then with the airplane upside down, at the top of the loop, he reaches over to the panel, shuts down the right engine, and feathers the prop. The crowd hears that engine wind down. They see the blade stop turning, and he keeps flying. Loops, rolls, Cuban eights, all on one engine. Then he shuts down the left one too.
Both props feathered. Stopped, a twin-engine business airplane, gliding through aerobatics, dead silent except for the wind. He'd do a loop, a roll, an 8-point hesitation roll. And then he'd grease it onto the runway. Dead stick, both engines off, roll out, turn off at the same taxiway every single time, and coast right up to show center where he'd started, without restarting an engine. Energy management, that's what he was teaching, whether the crowd knew it or not. Every maneuver was a transaction. Trade altitude for airspeed, trade airspeed for altitude. Never waste a foot-pound. He could see the energy in an airplane, the way a chess master sees the board. And then there was the iced tea trick. He'd take off with a glass of iced tea sitting on the glare shield. Climb out. Roll the airplane through a perfect barrel roll, 1G all the way around, and pour the tea into the glass while inverted. Not a drop spilled, because in a properly flown barrel roll, you're at one positive G the whole way. The airplane doesn't know it's upside down, neither does the tea. He flew that routine, more or less unchanged, for 40 years. 40 years. From the early 60s into the 1990s, in 1993, the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, tried to take his medical certificate away, said he was too old. Two doctors at the FAA decided Bob Hoover, at 71 years old, wasn't fit to fly anymore. The aviation community lost its mind. Pilots all over the country wrote letters. Hoover went to Australia, took their flight medical, passed it cold, and Australia gave him a certificate. Eventually, the FAA backed down and gave him his back. But it took 2 years. He flew until he was in his 80s. He passed in October of 2016 at 94 years old. They held his memorial at the Aerospace Museum of California. Yeager came, Burt Rutan came, half the great pilots of the 20th century came to say goodbye to the greatest one of all.
Here's the thing I want you to take away from Bob Hoover, though. It wasn't the showmanship. It wasn't the iced tea. It was the discipline. Every maneuver he flew the same way every single time. He briefed every flight. He chair flew every routine. He treated a Tuesday air show in Akron the same way he treated Oshkosh on a Saturday afternoon. He used to say that he never had an emergency, only situations he hadn't planned for, and he tried to plan for everything. That's the lesson. You don't have to fly a Mustang at an air show to fly like Bob Hoover. You just have to be the same pilot every time you climb into the cockpit. Brief the flight. Know your airplane. Manage your energy. Never let the airplane get ahead of you. Most of what I told you today comes from his autobiography, Forever Flying, which he wrote with Mark Shaw back in 96, and from the wonderful documentary Flying the Feathered Edge that Kim first put together a few years before he passed. If you've never read Forever Flying, do yourself a favor. It'll make you a better pilot just sitting in your armchair. You can find more stories like this over at radiohangar.com. Bob Hoover used to end his airshow routines by tipping that straw cowboy hat to the crowd, so I'll tip mine to him. Blue skies, Bob. We're still trying to fly like you.